How are you feeling about summer travel? If you're like most Americans, looking forward to it and feeling good, says NPR's David Shaper.
Respondents to the survey say that they're more pleased with their service on airlines than they have been in the past. So customer satisfaction is on its way up. That said, it was coming from a pretty low point.
We talk planes, trains, and automobiles. And now that summer is here, Chicago Tribune critic Greg Kot tells us how to enjoy the best musical festivals, all within driving distance of Illinois.
If you're just starting to get into music and you're into one or two bands on the bill and then you stumble into three or four others, you've just made a whole bunch of new bands that are your new favorite bands. And that's what the ideal festival experience is like.
Plus, the director behind a play that's getting another staging at the Goodman Theater in Chicago, Having Our Say. That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Don't go anywhere. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We've got lots of summer preparation on the program today, everything from summer music festivals to summer travel. But first, this year marks the 25th anniversary of the publishing of the New York Times bestselling memoir, Having Our Say, the Delaney sisters' first 100 years. And the play about the lives of two centenarian sisters is undergoing a revival right now at Chicago's Goodman Theater. It's playing until June 10th. It's an intimate portrait of two sisters who lived well past 100 years, a lifetime that spanned remarkable change for the two African-American women whose father was born into slavery. Chuck Smith is the resident director of the Goodman. Marie Thomas is an actor who plays Sadie in the production of this play. I spoke with both of them at the Goodman Theater in Chicago recently. I started by asking Chuck to tell us a little bit more about this story.
The play is about the lives of these two sisters, which encompasses pretty much the whole of the 20th century. So we get everything that happened in the 20th century through the eyes of these two women. They're able to go back even into the 19th century because their history, the knowledge of their family history is so strong.
And it's remarkable, and all of that's accurate.
All of the history of
their family.
History documented and with photographs.
I want to ask you about the photographs, too. I want to get to that in a minute. But to the story of these women, so they never married, which is a wonderful joke they have. They think that's why they lived to be 103 and 101, because they said they never had husbands.
They never married.
To stress them out.
And also another reason why they didn't, they say they didn't marry is because they were too smart. They were very well educated. That threatens, especially, I would say.
In the 1920s, when Bessie was a dentist in Harlem?
Yeah, that just wasn't, no. Where were the guys that could match them, you know, educationally and, you know, intellectually? There were few. Of course, there's always a few, but it wasn't like, you know, there was tons of guys who they could pair up with.
I'm speaking with Chuck Smith, who's the director of Having Your Say, which is a revival that's going on at the Goodman now. It's actually playing through June 10th here at the Goodman. Marie Thomas is also with us. She's part of the two-person cast of this show. Marie, how tough is that? It's the two of you on stage. It runs about an hour?
It's two hours.
One very short intermission. And it's the two of you up there, but it's... It's really, so there's a lot of pressure, I would imagine, on both of you to be carrying this. It's an unusual, it's opposed to a one-man, it's a two-woman show.
I know, but the more we do it, the less tense and problematic it gets, although sometimes, you know, my tongue will get caught and I'll be saying something that sounds a little different, and then what will happen in my mind, I say, oh, I didn't say that, and I try to fix it. I've learned not to do that. Let's not go back and try to fix it. Let's just keep going forward. And the idea and the essence is always there, but sometimes the words aren't exactly as they're written in the script, and that got to be an issue for a while because we had these lovely interns who would do line readings with us, and we had to make sure we had the lines correctly because I know that there's a rhythm to every playwright and you just can't, you know, decide the way that you want to see it.
Well, how would you describe the rhythm of this?
Well, to me, it flows and then it doesn't. It goes from one idea to another. And that was the problem, the non sequitur. You know, and I generally had that problem with most of them because, oh, what did she say? then I'm going to someplace else. And I've learned to make sure that I'm aware of when that happens so I don't go up in my head.
Right, because it's the two sisters telling a story.
Absolutely.
And they're telling the story of their lives. And to the point of the photographs, that is sort of a third character because there's a lovely, I wonder if we could talk about the staging for a moment. The way that it's staged, the photographs as they're talking about them are appearing behind the women.
Yeah, the set is designed with picture frames. And in certain of these frames, images appear. And it is the images that are being described at the time by the sisters.
And these are the actual images. These are their family portraits.
These portraits come with the play. When you commission the play, depending on the budget, you get the A group or the B group. When I did a show in my summer stock, they didn't have much money. We got the B group of photos.
But Goodman has the A group.
The Goodman's got the A group, and they got the primo photos.
And the reason I'm saying this about these photos is these are photos pre-Civil War, and they're telling the stories of their ancestors.
Yeah, their family had these photographs and took care of them so that they could make sure that their children would have them to share.
Yeah. And what really struck me about this is an era where photographs were actually really meaningful.
Of course.
I think that now in sort of our time of Instagram and social media photos, I mean, this was like a photo and it was the only one that they would probably – that the only picture of this person that would exist for their lifetime, and they really were treasured.
That's right. That is correct. Yeah. It's a really amazing that the family had the insight to make sure that this is well documented, their family history is well documented. And the fact that these two sisters are so well lucid and well educated to tell this story in a concise and clear manner. It's not nothing that you have to decipher. It's there coming from their mouths. When they say having our say, it is their say. And it's so conversational, which is why it's so difficult for the actors to put everything into place, you know, because sometimes it doesn't run just chronologically or logically. They do skip like we do in ordinary
when you're telling a story,
right? You know,
and to the Marie, the story of these women is, it makes you realize, and for me, I always kind of it's remarkable to me that someone who just passed away, maybe in their case this was the early 90s, that their father was a slave.
He was 7 years old when the surrender came. And most former slaves didn't like to talk about what happened to them because it was so difficult. And most of them had very sad stories, so they were trying to move ahead all the time. But there were difficult times. They said those times after slavery days were very hard. You know, I can remember visiting with my grandmother in Augusta, Georgia, and just kind of have a feel of where some of their feelings came from. There was, I think my grandmother's grandmother had been a slave as a little girl. And they were asking her, my mother asked her what happened to her when the surrender came. She said she was in the house and she was hiding under the table. So I see that image all the time, is they were afraid. They didn't know whether they were going to be taken someplace else to do the same thing, or what did this really mean, because the only thing she knew to do was to hide from all the destruction and things that were going on at the time. So I remember those things. And I think about my grandmother, and I think about my mother, and I think about on both sides of my family and how they survived, how the women survived. And I do have an aunt who never got married, and she's passed just recently. And I have an aunt that's 103 years old. My mother's aunt lived to be 101, and she was still very lucid near the end of her days. I call on these people, these ancestors, this information that I would piecemeal into my life when I'm playing Sadie, because there were times when my mother was Sadie in order to get us through what we needed to get through. She went around the situation and she got us to where we needed to go. And I've had a couple of incidents where I witnessed it, and it's sort of in the play when the man calls our mother auntie. And that was sort of a put-down way that they told.
It's kind of like a female equivalent of boy.
Yeah, well,
a little
then they called me an uncle and boy. But my mother and I were in a department store when I was a little girl. And sometimes people do things they don't really understand that they're doing. And she said, well, what can I do for you girls? And so my mother said, I only see one girl here. And that was me, of course. And I said, this is a very interesting approach to things. But that was how I was brought up, to know who I was, what I could do, and to work around all of the prejudice and difficulties that came in my face, I was going to do what I wanted to do. And when I say that and say that, I said, I never let prejudice stop me from doing what I want to do in life. And indeed, I have not.
Right. And that's the line. That's what Sadie says.
Yes, I have not.
And that's the same for you in your
life. Absolutely. Whatever I need to do, climb mountains, go under one, go around, change the situation, I do.
And to that,
see, I really
Chuck.
Know how to cast a show now.
You do. Chuck, I wanted to ask, and I want to ask both of you about this. I think that when we also what struck me when I was listening to this story is how many of these stories, these oral histories, these stories of Americans, we are now learning as part of our American history now in 2018. And I think it's maybe more of a mainstream understanding of this. And this is not necessarily something that I learned in history class growing up. Yeah. How important do you think is it to have these layers of American history and American stories being told?
Well, unfortunately, history is not taught well in our schools. It's unfortunate that our youth have to find this out, this history. They don't get history like this in depth until they go to college and take an African-American history course. And usually what I've found over the course of my career and when I was in school is that it makes the student very angry when they first learn all of this. And I think it's not a good time to learn this. I think you got to learn this from the jump and learn how to live with it and know so that you can watch for it and make sure that it doesn't happen again. And I think that's part of not my mission, but it's part of what I do. It's in my DNA to make sure that the African Americans get as much of their history from me as I can put on the stage.
And so I wanted to ask for both of you, there's also another line in the play that maybe our country will finally come to terms with this race mess.
Yes.
And when we think about the relevance of that in America in 2018, I just wanted to ask you, is it odd, Marie, to be doing this play? And there's a couple of jokes about Dan Quayle, so we know the time frame in which this is happening. But it's also in the context of a really polarized country and a rise in hate crimes and white supremacy groups and all of these sorts of things.
We were very disturbed by when the election was over, and there was nothing anybody could do about it. But I say that this is for a reason here. This is more overt than it's ever been in some instances throughout my lifetime. Yeah, it's there, but you just really probably didn't see it. But this is very overt because of the news media, because of everybody reporting on everybody, because of the digital world that we live in. We can see what's going on. And I have plays that I've written for the young teenagers in my workshop that talk about African-American history, from the play called The Journey from Slavery to the Civil Rights Movement to Harlem Renaissance to the Civil Rights Movement itself, which I called Frontline because I was a part of that. But a lot of people don't know it was just not the people that everybody knew. It was the young people who went to jail in Alabama and all of those things. So I am constantly on the precipice, I guess, of constantly jumping off and saying, well, did you know about this? Did you know about that? And I'm glad to have had the opportunity and the lull in my so-called acting career to do the workshops with these children and teach them these things. And now there are 13 people who work in that workshop, 11 of them are former students of the theater workshop. So I feel very proud that they are now generating the same kind of thing to people they know. And one young lady said she went to Florida A&M and she aced her African-American class. So I feel
very proud. What do you want young people to take away from this, then,
well,
Marie?
That they have to stay vigilant, just like Chuck said. You really have to stay on top of it. Don't just assume that this is the way it always was. Look back at history and see if it's still happening, and be a soldier. You know, don't lay down and say, well, this is the way it is, and I can't do anything about it. That's not true. We all have an incredible spirit inside of us that will allow us to move forward no matter what, but you can't stop. You can't stop. It's like people who run businesses. Can you keep going when the business is not working well? What do you do? Do you just give up? Do you change? You change what you're doing. You look at what you're doing and you change how you approach it. And that's been my way of dealing, or still being here, doing the acting, which I left for a little while. I retired. I said I was retired, but really I wasn't. But I did something else. And therefore, I don't want to always be waiting to act. To me, I have a life, and that life is supposed to do something other than just wait for somebody to call me on the telephone.
And to that point, I wonder, these roles, we always hear Hollywood, conversations in Hollywood about roles for women, roles for women after the age of 40, almost non-existent. This is a rare leading role.
It's wonderful. Now, this sounds really terrible. It's no big thing, because it should be what should be. I'll write a play for myself if I can't find anything else to do, or I'll find a project to direct if I can't find anything else to do. I refuse to allow somebody to control my life and wait for them to call me. I can't waste my time. I can't even believe I'm as old as I am, but I just can't waste my time waiting for something to happen. I've just never been able to do that, and I don't want to regret. That's the thing I learned early on. No regrets. Do the work.
And that's a good lesson for any person who's thinking about acting. You can't sit and wait. If that phone don't ring, you gotta jump out there and start making work for yourself.
And to the point, Chuck, just about that line about our country coming to terms with this race mess.
We have no choice but to come to terms with this race mess, because it's right here in front of our face. Like Marie says, it's the one advantage of all of this is that it is right here in front of my face. It's blatant now. That one of the lines in the play is at the end, she says, "We've outlived the Revy boys," which are white racist men by their description. I say, unfortunately, we have not outlived the Revy boys. The Revy boys are alive and well and living in America. But if there's one thing that we have the advantage of now, is that they don't have their hoods on. They're right there in front of our face. And because they're bold enough now to say, "I am a racist." And so we have to deal with that.
Chuck Smith is the director of Having Our Say, the Delaney Sisters' First 100 Years. Marie Thomas plays Sadie. Both of you, thank you for being with me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for tuning in to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. With the summer season officially here, that means it's time to start thinking about getting outside to enjoy some music. Of course, you always hear about festivals like Coachella in California, but you don't have to travel all the way across the country to see great live music. There's lots of music festivals within driving distance, whether that's in Wisconsin or Tennessee or right here in Illinois. And joining us now to give us some suggestions for the summer festival season is Greg Kott. He's the music critic for the Chicago Tribune and co-host of the public radio program Sound Opinions. Hi, Greg. Welcome to the 21st.
Glad to be here, Nyla. Thank you.
So before we get to some of these Midwest music festivals, I wanted to hear your take on festivals in general. Is this something you like to do, to see music outside?
I like doing things outdoors in the summer. I think most people in Chicago do. It's people like being outdoors and seeing music. Obviously you're dealing with the elements. You're dealing with an added level of distractions in terms of the weather. The fact that people are out in a festival setting doesn't necessarily mean they're just there for the music. They're there to do other things, socialize and enjoy the sun or have some food, have some drinks. So there's sort of a party atmosphere that maybe wouldn't be associated if you went to see the same act in a club. Obviously, for me as a music lover, the best place to see a great band is in a relatively small club or theater.
Which is not very many of these music festivals we're about to talk about.
Right, exactly. But I think that the great thing about a festival experience is that, especially if you're a younger listener, you normally wouldn't be able to afford to go see or even be inclined to see a band that's like, say, playing on a noon slot or 1 o'clock slot at Lollapalooza. But you're there anyway because, you really want to see the headliner that night. Let's say it's Arcade Fire or Kendrick Lamar or somebody like that. And you've got 6-7 hours to just sort of wander around and see stuff, and there's all these bands, and you're going to stumble into 3 or 4 things that you're going, wow, that's kind of cool. And the idea is, the way it's supposed to work is that, you know, the next time that band shows up in town, you know who it is, you're going to go to that club and see that band. So it's kind of a win-win situation for everybody.
Yeah, it's a way to introduce you, I guess, also to different bands you probably wouldn't have maybe thought about going to see before, it sounds like.
Exactly. It's to me, it's a great way to, if you're just starting to get into music, and like I said, you're into one or two bands on the bill, and then you stumble into three or four others, you've just made a whole bunch of new bands that are your new favorite bands, and that's what the ideal festival experience is like.
And now I wanted to ask you about that, because then that assumes that oftentimes a lot of these festivals are programming similar music, and that we haven't seen as much. And I'm thinking about Pitchfork, or I wonder if we could even start with if we started chronologically, festivals that aren't too far from Illinois. June 7th through 10th in Tennessee is Bonnaroo. I always thought this was kind of a jam band fest, but Eminem's the headliner?
Yeah, well, I think these festivals are kind of, they become a hodgepodge kind of identity for each of these festivals. It used to be kind of narrowly defined. You know, Lollapalooza used to be the alternative festival. Bonnaroo was the jam band festival. You know, Coachella was kind of the cutting edge festival on the West Coast. Now you have all of these festivals, you know, just mushrooming around the country. So you have hundreds and hundreds of festivals competing for acts. Inevitably, you're going to have a lot of overlap and a lot of crossover, just because of there's only a certain number of bands touring every summer. I don't see a whole lot of festivals kind of with a clear identity about what kind of music they book anymore. It's more about who's available, and I want to go grab this band, and I want to go grab that band. So Bonnaroo now has, you know, gone way beyond the jam band sort of philosophy. And yeah, as you said, Eminem is there. You know, their lineup on Saturday, they've got Eminem and Bon Iver. They've got Cascade and Anderson .Paak. I mean, those are like four acts that you normally wouldn't see, you know, in the same venue. If somebody was just booking a three or four act bill in a venue, they would book three or four acts that have similar audiences. Those are four bands that are four acts that have very different audiences. So that's kind of the festival experience now, is you're going to see this kind of hodgepodge effect. And I think it's more aimed at a demographic rather than a particular genre.
So do you think Bonnaroo's worth going to this year?
I never think Bonnaroo's worth going to, but, you know, it's not for me. It's, you know, I don't like camping. Let's put it that.
I'm with you on that one. So
I'm a city guy. I like concrete and steel around me. I feel weird about anything that involves being out in nature more than, you know, a few hours at a time. I certainly don't want to sleep in it, you know.
Oh, no. So that's our next festival you're also going to. This next one maybe is also not for you. It's Electric Forest in Rothbury, Michigan, which is about a 3.5-hour drive from Chicago. What do you know about Electric Forest?
You're exactly right. It's supposed to be this sort of bucolic getaway kind of weekend, although it's a little more high-end. Bonnaroo is really kind of roughing it. With Rothbury, you know, the Electric Forest in Rothbury, it's kind of, you can camp, but you can also rent cabins. You know, you can stay in a deluxe lodge, you know. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, camping for rich kids or something like that.
This is EDM, right? This is sort of like EDM equivalent of Coachella?
That's what they build themselves at. But again, the lineup.
Hence the glamping, right.
Yeah, you've got the jam, you know, the jam band thing with String Cheese Incidents. You've got Bass Nectar, who's kind of a hippie DJ. So you have this kind of wide variety, but it's all very tame by comparison. I've been to raves in the wilds of Wisconsin back in the day when raves were the thing to go to, or late 80s, early 90s. And those things were true, trippy, psychedelic, you know, experiences.
Those don't happen anymore, Greg?
Yeah, I mean, getting the licensing for something like that is nearly impossible in the environment we live in now. The 24/7 dance party, those are a thing of the past. They had sort of an outlaw vibe. Those have been effectively reined in, and I would say Electric Force is kind of the corporate version of something like that.
I'm speaking with Greg Kott. He is music critic for the Chicago Tribune, host of Sound Opinions, which you can catch on a lot of public radio stations. And So let's get back to Chicago. You said you like the concrete of Chicago. There's a new festival. This is Mambi on the Beach. This is pretty new, right?
Yeah, this promoter React has been doing some good stuff in Chicago. And again, they're coming sort of more from a dance, electronic music end of the spectrum. But again, this is a fairly diverse lineup. It's in a cool spot. It's on Oakwood Beach, which is on the south side, 41st Street area, right on the lake. And, you know, if the weather's spectacular, it can be quite an experience. It's a fun festival. It's great to be out on the beach on Lake Michigan. They do a pretty good job. It's an eclectic mix. It's hip-hop, it's rock, it's electro. You know, you've got Common, Spoon, Grizzly Bear. I mean, those are three very diverse headliners. You've got Russ, who's an up-and-coming hip-hop artist, and then Cold War Kids. And then you've got DJ sets, you know, people like Richie Houghton, who's one of the great techno DJs, second wave out of Detroit DJing. So, I mean, it's a kind of a diverse, kind of cool lineup, and, you know, it's a two-day festival, which to me is like a perfect festival experience. 2 days on the beach with a diverse lineup of artists who are kind of not super mega popular, but have a good track record of being good live performers. I think that's a pretty well curated festival.
Yeah, that's June 23rd to the 24th, Mambi on the Beach. The weekend of July 6th, Greg, is Eau Claire's Music Festival in Wisconsin, but the website doesn't even say who. It's kind of mysterious. Do we know who's performing? This is one where you're going for the destination, regardless of whether or not you know who's performing.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, it was started by, you know, a member of the National and Justin Vernon, who is basically Bon Iver. And Justin lives in that area. So he, you know, this is, I think they were kind of viewing this a few years ago as a kind of a mellow weekend devoted to the arts, kind of a throwback to sort of like a Woodstock era. And by Woodstock, I mean the village of Woodstock, you know, kind of like you could come and hang out and just kind of be an artist and very bohemian kind of experience. And they've had some decent acts in the past. Both Bon Iver and the National have played it. Sufjan Stevens, Erykah Badu, you know, Spoon, Blind Boys of Alabama, Sturgill Simpson. They're not announcing the headliners or any acts at this point. They said they're going to let those kind of dribble out. But we don't want it to be about the acts, man. We're cooler than that, you know? So it's kind of, okay. All right, take your chances. But I think it's more
it's
about
a lifestyle that you're getting, right?
Yeah, personally, if I'm going to make a trip to Wisconsin and pay some money, I'd like to know who I'm going to go see before I step in there.
That's just after 4th of July in Wisconsin. Also, around that time in Des Moines, if you're willing to drive to Des Moines, there's a festival called 8035. I just thought it was interesting how many female headliners they have at this festival.
Well, you know, I don't know about that. I mean, they have a few compared to some of the other festivals. Kesha's there, you know, Fantagram, who's got a female lead vocalist, Courtney Barnett.
Sometimes I get mad. It's not half as bad. Pull yourself together and just calm down.
So, yes, that's notable. But I don't know if that's... Is that what this is? Kind of the new Lilith Fair? I wonder if this is just sort of a marketing move of convenience while these female performers happen to be available and we're going to book them. I've not been to that festival. I don't know what it's actually all about in terms of the layout or whether it's well run. But it is different.
Let's go back to Illinois and to kind of the two festivals that get a lot of attention in Chicago. Let's start with Pitchfork. We've got people tuning in from all over the state. Is it worth a drive for Chicago for Pitchfork?
I think so. Pitchfork's one of my favorite festivals to cover. It's very manageable in terms of, you know, the space. I do think it sometimes feels a little oversold. That's not unusual for any festival that's trying to make money. I do think they do an excellent job of booking acts that I think people who are passionate about music want to see.
I'm excited about seeing Lauryn Hill.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, we'll see if Lauryn Hill
is she going to show up? That's my question. Is it worth it? I'm trying to do the calculus. Is it worth it to go to Pitchfork because will Lauryn Hill show up?
But I'm excited about Chaka Khan. You know, Chaka Khan's a legend. And
absolutely.
Obviously a Chicago-based performer. That's where she got her start. And she's the same night as Lauryn Hill, and I think that's going to be fantastic to be able to see her, as well as a rising Chicago hip-hop star, No Name, who's also happens to be a female artist who is developing a great reputation, well-deserved, as an artist to watch. So there's some really good stuff on that festival bill. I really like the fact that they're mixing kind of influential artists who have influenced artists of this generation. You know, I'm thinking of somebody not only like Chaka Khan, but Rafael Sadiq, who's playing on Saturday. You know, you've got Courtney Barnett on this bill as well. She's had an incredible year, incredible couple of years. Earl Sweatshirt from Odd Future, a really talented MC. So I think the diversity of the bill is superb, and I also think the level of the acts. I mean, you've got a great Chicago band named Milk Belly performing early in the day on Friday, alongside somebody like Lucy Dacus, who just made one of the best albums of the year. That's a loaded lineup. That's a lineup that you want to get there, you know, at the opening bell, so you don't miss anybody, and you can see somebody pretty good or great for, you know, a sustained period of 6-7 hours, and I think that's rare among festivals these days.
Mm-hmm. And then at the other end of this is Lollapalooza is in early August.
I think a lot of people are suffering Lolla burnout at this point. I think the fact that the ticket sales were the slowest they've been in years this year is indicative of something. I think, you know, they went to the four-day format. They initially started out as 2 days in Chicago in 2005. Then they went to three. Then they went to four for their 25th anniversary. And they said, oh, it's a one-off. And are we going to go to 4 days consistently now? And, you know, of course, they got the nod from the city to do it because the city loves getting more money from, you know, the C3 Presents promoter and Live Nation, who are co-promoters of the event. So the amount of money that the city is getting is a huge enticement to them to allow it to go 4 days. But in terms of a great festival experience, Lollapalooza is no longer that. It's impossible to fill that lineup with goodness. You know, you're just going to get about half the stuff is going to be completely forgotten.
As opposed to Bruno Mars. Who's on the, so Bruno Mars, The Weeknd, Jack White, Arctic Monkeys, those are kind of there's going to be a lot of big names, but I was just...
But those headliners are all kind of boring to me. You know, they're all acts who have played Lollapalooza, for example, at least one previous time, and sometimes more. Bruno Mars is the only new face among the headliners. You know, Bruno Mars is somebody that, you know, you can see at the United Center, and I probably have a far better experience than you would out at Grant Park.
Pitchfork, Lolla, Bonnaroo, whether it's any of these, you can get out to some of these festivals this summer. We'll have links on our website if you're interested in some of these. And you can catch Greg on Sound Opinions and at the Chicago Tribune. Thanks, Greg.
Thank you, Nyla. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for tuning in to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. This last weekend marked the unofficial start to summer and to the summer travel season. So how are our major airports doing this summer, and what is summer travel looking like? Do you need to, like every summer, bring lots of patience? NPR's David Shaper is here to give us an update. He's on the line now from his base in Chicago. Hi, David. Welcome back to The 21st.
Thanks for having me, Nyla.
Yeah. Last summer, I think there was a lot of, at this time last summer, there was a lot of drama around United and other things. This summer, a little quieter in terms of that, but what was it looking like in terms of airline passenger traffic?
Yeah, so, you know, last year, in the last couple of years, we've had a lot of, turbulence, if you will, pun intended, with the airline industry. Last year, at this time, United was just kind of trying to save face from that that horrendous incident in which a passenger on a flight from that was bound from Chicago to Louisville was dragged off the plane by security officers at O'Hare because he refused to give up his seat. He refused to be involuntarily bumped. So they were recovering from that. There was a few other incidents.
Yeah, the bunny that died.
There was a bunny that died on a United flight. There was also an American Airlines incident with a flight attendant and a passenger with a stroller trying to get on the plane and that sort of thing. And so the airlines, United in particular, but the airlines were trying to save face and kind of focus their customer service operations and put the customer more front forward to have a kinder, gentler approach to handling passengers. They've kind of recovered from that. A survey just came out the other day, this week, that showed, this is the J.D. Power and Associates survey of airline satisfaction, that for the seventh year in a row, the respondents to the survey say that they're more pleased with their service on airlines than they have been in the past. So customer satisfaction is on its way up. That said, it was coming from a pretty low point. So they seem to be recovering in that aspect. The other thing that was, I think, 2 years ago, we had a fiasco in terms of a spring, a TSA.
TSA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that just got.
That was Midway, right?
Mm-hmm. That was at Midway, but that was actually at airports all across the country. I mean, the TSA had planned on more people taking advantage of PreCheck and enrolling in that program so they wouldn't have to go through the normal security lines, and they'd be essentially pre-screened and then therefore would not have to take their shoes off and not have to go through the sort of rigmarole that most of us do. But not as many people enrolled in PreCheck. This enrollment numbers are still down from where they were, but in the process, the TSA, with budget constraints, was not replacing staff that gradually left the department. So they were down in terms of staffing. They've staffed up. They're better equipped now. They're getting new technology this summer again. Well, I think people will see more and more new screening equipment, new types of screening equipment at airports, and may not have to, depending on the type of line that they go through. I know they have these at Midway now, these screeners that you don't have to remove your laptop and your other electronic devices from your carry-on bags. So there's a whole bunch of things that are going to make those lines go quicker. As I said before, the airlines are trying to do a better job of being more front forward with customers in terms of improving the customer experience and improving customer satisfaction. In addition, airfares are down from where they were a year ago. One statistic I saw is about 7% lower than they were at the start of last summer. And that's leading to more people getting on planes, more people wanting to fly somewhere this summer. And that actually could make those lines longer again, could make the airports a little bit jammed, maybe a little uncomfortable. But in response to that, the airlines have been adding capacity. This will be a record year for air travel. I think 246 million passengers are expected to go through airports this summer. And that's an all-time high from what the airline industry is telling us.
Was this past Memorial Day weekend better than last year too, David?
It was actually, yes, it was. I thought it was down. In terms of air travel, it was up a little bit. The fares were down. That led to a lot of people flying more. But the projections that the airline industry gives us starts today, June 1st. So it goes from June 1st through August 31st. It doesn't include those also very busy weekends, Memorial Day and Labor Day, that bookend the summer.
Can I ask just one more question about air travel? Are there any new requirements for TSA or for screening that people need to know about this year?
Well, I know from my own personal experience that they are asking people to remove, if they don't have the special screening equipment that doesn't require you to remove all the electronics, they will ask you to take out an iPad or some sort of anything larger than a cell phone can't be still included in your purse or your backpack or your carry-on bag. And that's really just a precaution because I travel with my recording equipment all the time, and I just take a lot of the stuff out just so they don't have to run the bag through again, because they will when they see all these crazy wires and things like that. I had an experience where they were just startled by the number of AA batteries that I carry with me all the time for my equipment.
And so, you just said, I am in public radio.
Right? You would not believe how these tape recorders go through batteries sometimes. So, yeah, it's patience is required. No matter where you're going, whether you're driving or flying or walking, you just got to be patient this summer, because a lot of people want to get out and about, and a lot of people want to hit the road and enjoy the few summer months. We had a cold, it seemed like a very long spring, and I think there's a lot of pent-up demand out there for people to just get out and get going somewhere across the country.
But, David, let's talk about gas prices for a moment. Certainly sure. Rising compared to last year, certainly particularly within the past month, we've seen levels of gas prices, correct me if I'm wrong, we haven't seen gas prices this way for a couple of years. Is it as long as five years?
It's almost 4 years. The last time the gas prices hit, on average, all across the country, $3 a gallon, which we're right below that right now on the national average. I know Illinois is a little higher, was, I think, October of 2014, so we're almost at 4 years. That summer in 2014 was a pretty expensive summer for gas. I remember thinking that for a lot of people were thinking at that time that maybe we would never go below $3 a gallon again. And here we did. The last couple of years we've been spoiled by low gas prices. People are buying bigger vehicles again. SUVs are gaining all kinds of new customers and a loyal following once again, particularly smaller and mid-sized SUVs that do have a little bit better gas mileage. But people can expect to pay $3 or more a gallon this summer. Now, those prices were peaking just before Memorial Day weekend last weekend at just under $3 a gallon. I've seen gas stations in the Chicago area at $3.39, $3.49, $3.59 and up in the city in particular. So that's pretty high, and that's leading a lot of people to rethink whether or not they want to do that long road trip this summer. But crude prices at the end of last week, started dropping a little bit. OPEC has been giving some indications that they may increase production, and if oil production increases, that could lower the prices significantly, or at least stop the rise in prices for gas this summer. I think OPEC is meeting next week, if I'm not mistaken, and we expect some sort of statement from them about whether or not the oil-producing nations will start increasing production.
All right, so we've talked about air, we've talked about car, we haven't talked about rail. What do we know about train travel throughout Illinois this summer, throughout the country? What are we expecting to see with that? I wonder how much that tracks with gas prices as well, David.
You know, they do see a pretty strong uptick in traffic on the rails. When gas prices hit, again, that $3 a gallon spot is about the sweet spot, where all of a sudden taking the train seems to make a lot more economical sense. And we're getting to the point now in the Midwest network, in a lot of these routes, you know, to Champaign-Urbana, to Springfield, to Bloomington-Normal, to Carbondale, to St. Louis, even to Macomb and Galesburg, and there are a lot of routes in Illinois that you can get a lot of places to and from Chicago and have a great experience, and it's faster. The service is becoming more regular. They used to be plagued by all kinds of delays with these rails that they share with the freight railroads. So a lot of those bumps in the road have been kind of smoothed out, and the service is getting better, and Amtrak is projecting a pretty significant uptick in traffic this summer. There are also routes into Michigan that are very popular. The Milwaukee route is very popular. They've added trains and added scheduled service between Chicago and Milwaukee. There are a lot of options for taking the train, and I think it's going to be a pretty popular thing, especially for the shorter trips and the sort of weekend getaways, or just let's do a couple of nights here, let's do a couple of days out this way. I think people are really going back to the train and looking at options for rail travel this summer.
We're talking summer travel with NPR's David Schaefer. David, I wanted to end by asking you about some research you've been doing, which is how many Americans can afford to take vacations at all.
Yeah, you know, this is really interesting that there's been a study that was done by Bankrate.com, which is one of those personal finance websites. They survey people on all kinds of aspects of their spending. And for the first time, they started asking people about their summer travel plans. And this year, nearly one in four Americans say they're not going to go on a vacation this summer because they simply can't afford it. About half of Americans aren't planning a summer vacation this summer, but about half of them who are not going to go on vacation say the reason is they can't afford it. The other half have other reasons, work commitments, family commitments, those sorts of things. And I think we forget a lot of times that even just a simple weekend getaway, especially when gas prices start to rise, when, you know, airfares may be low, but you take a family of five, and even if you're getting a great deal of a $250 round trip somewhere, well, you know, you multiply that times five, and that's $1,250, and that's not affordable for a lot of families, particularly in the lower end of the wage scales. Wages have not grown particularly well, and while the economy has been growing and we've been adding jobs, wage growth in some sectors of the economy has lagged, and that's putting a lot of pressure on families. They've got to pay the rent or the mortgage first. They've got to make their car payments, pay for insurance, and those sorts of things. A vacation is lower down on the list of priorities, and so a lot of families are saying, not this year. And it's particularly common among younger Americans, those who are
have a lot of student loan debt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, who have student loan debt in the age range of 18 to 37. They're most likely to say that they're just either too busy or unable to get time off of work, or just simply cannot afford to get time to take time off of work and to make the expense of taking the family on a vacation.
All right. Thank you. That's NPR's David Schaefer, one of NPR's Midwest correspondents. If you can afford to take a vacation this summer, patience, as always, is still the word. Thanks for reminding us of that and other details, David.
And watch out for the construction crews. There's going to be a lot of road work around the Midwest in particular. So we have a short window for construction season.
Especially because spring was so terrible.
And the spring was terrible. I know that there were projects, some of the interstate projects were delayed because they just couldn't get, we had all that snow up in the northern part of the state and further north in the Midwest that prevented a lot of crews from doing a lot of the work that they wanted to do in March, April, and even into May.
Right. So we're down to our two seasons, right? Winter and construction.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Thanks, David.
My pleasure.
That's all the time we have for today. On Monday, advocates in Springfield are proposing a new way to reduce the so-called revolving door of homelessness in that city. It would dedicate a specific unit of police called Homeless Outreach Team to build trust with people struggling with homelessness. Plus, we'll recap an eventful week in state politics. If you haven't been paying attention, lawmakers passed a budget before the deadline yesterday, and Governor Rauner said he will sign it. We'll unpack what we know about the budget and all the other major bills that passed the House and the Senate in this legislative session. Yesterday afternoon, at the end of session, we also learned about harassment allegations that have been brought against Democratic Representative Liu Lang. Marian Longcar said the Democratic leader, quote, committed terrible acts against her while she advocated for a bill that he sponsored, end quote. Representative Lang denied this. He also stepped down from his House leadership position while an ethics committee investigates the allegations. And on top of all of that, President Trump said he might commute the sentence of former Governor Rod Blagojevich. All of that happened just yesterday. We're going to be unpacking all of this Monday during our regular state politics roundup. You can always find past shows on the NPR One app. Search for the 21st. We're also available on iTunes and Android. If you follow us on Twitter, our handle is 21STShow. We live tweet during the program with more analysis and background about what we're talking about. And when we're not on air, you can follow us for the latest in Illinois news. You can also search for us on Facebook. Look for the 21st to like us, and then you can message us. You can see what we're working on. You can post questions or comments you'd like us to ask on air. All those links, every other way to contact us, all you have to remember is our website, 21stshow.org. We're produced by Libby Foster, Robin Lynn, and Alan Montesilio. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Scott Cameron is our executive editor. Special thanks to the band Public Access for our theme music. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Have a great weekend.